wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain shone by love. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain shone by love.
With Ian Punnett, call the wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. To talk toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, toll-free, call 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach Ian by calling their in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5 and dialing toll-free 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast Live with Ian Punnett.
We're shooting you the numbers just in case you want to join the conversation coming up with Andrew Kolarik. We're not doing open lines here, but if you've experienced something in the way of data mining already, or if you've got a contribution to that, we'll love to take your call between now and the end of this hour. Coming up, Greg Braden next hour, Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer. This is a very interesting story he tells of finding a Native American culture and a Tibetan culture that practiced this same remote, less accessed form of prayer. And so didn't appear to be a connection between the two of them, but in his travels, he found it, and it makes for a very good story and also a great conversation coming up. Secrets of a Lost Mode of Prayer. It's a new way, if you will, of praying, which is, of course, at the same time, very ancient. And we'll get into that along with discussions about the power fields that are around all of us with Greg Braden. He's a scientist who takes a very scientific viewpoint of the mystical aspects of life. Greg Braden will do that coming up on Coast to Coast Live. And remember, too, just in case you missed it, if you'd like, you can call and order the After Dark newsletter, 1-888-727-5505. Been a while since we plugged it. I heard the new promo for that was running, and there's an article in there about the nanotechnology that they're working on that would create a shirt that could sense when it was cold out, and so it could turn into a warming shirt, and then when it got hot, it could turn into a cooling shirt. I'm not exactly sure how universal an application that is. I'm sure there are people who could use that, but we really are making these big advancements in nanotechnology. Is a new shirt really where we start with that? I guess if I were in charge of the project, my first nanotechnology invention would be a cheesecake that makes me thinner, but that's just me. Coming up, Andrew Kolarik, data mining. It appears to be happening. A story released this week. More on it next. All across North America, it's Saturday night, and this is Coast to Coast Live. I've neglected to do all of my research on you, Andrew Kolarik, so you'll help me walk through it a little bit. I know you're Andrew Kolarik, PhD, aren't you? Isn't that what the email said?
Yes. Yeah, I have my PhD in information security.
Have we met before?
Well, we've corresponded.
Yeah, but we never talked on the air before, right?
No, this is my first appearance.
Well, it's all long overdue. And I've enjoyed our correspondence, but I asked Lisa Lyon, the producer, I said, I just had this feeling in the back of my head that we talked sometime before on the radio. Well, I'm glad then that we're not crazy, because we went looking for it and we couldn't find it, but we're so glad you made time for us this evening to talk about it. And thank you for, too, for staying in touch and always sending in these interesting emails. And this was one which caught our attention because it's part of an ongoing discussion. Now, you've been following and you're writing about and you speak about internet security and about information security in general. So you're more attuned to this than the rest of us. I didn't hear the story getting any mainstream buzz this week. Did you?
No, not at all. I watch CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, nothing.
Okay. Let's talk about what was originally promised not to happen. Was it 2 years ago when the subject kind of bubbled up the first time?
Yeah, essentially, Defense Department has a total information awareness program that they use various technologies or develop them to predict terrorist attacks through mining government databases and other records within the U.S.
We know that seems like, obviously, things that are connected to the Patriot Act, that would be getting information from libraries about what people are taking out or that kind of thing?
Well, there's a combination of sources. Essentially, the government calls it signals intelligence. So when they're eavesdropping on our wireless and telephone conversations, that's part of their intelligence gathering. When they're actually going into government and business in collaboration with businesses, databases, and then doing an extrapolation to mine this type of data, that's a whole separate element. And
so,
this is primarily why Congress said, hey, you know, there's enough people saying we don't like this, stop doing it.
So we do have the elements of the Patriot Act. That's not this, is what I'm saying. That the Patriot Act didn't allow for that kind of data mining. Although, at the time, this has come up a couple of times for discussion within the government, and they keep expressing an interest in doing data mining. But as you said, Congress and others have said no and thought that was the end of it.
Well, you know, when you're dealing with, a little history, the gross domestic product of this country was, what, 10.5 trillion. Approximately 20% of that is government expenditures. Now, 3/4 of that is state and local, but still, 1/4 of that is federal. Now, when you have a budget that big and you have a whole host of programs, departments, agencies, and so forth, it's real easy for one agency or one department to pick up where another leaves off.
So, but again, that this was not provided for in the Patriot Act. This was not information that they were supposed to be able to retrieve on us or to be able to, as you say, extrapolate on people, even in the name of national security.
Yeah, the Patriot Act wasn't designed for this type of purpose, and its application is really separate. However, if through this eavesdropping of international phone calls, for instance, a name is dropped, well, they could throw that name into a database search engine, one of these data mining apparatuses, and perhaps piece together other colleagues, other associations, locations, dates, times, and in theory, they're supposed to be able to find the history of all these electronic footprints that people leave just living day-to-day lives.
Okay, and so that would mean, let's say, some guy named Pierre Smith, who has been in this country for 20 years, gone to school, has a job, but he says something which trips a wire in the computer systems on a voicemail that he's leaving a message for somebody that turns out to be somebody that's associated with terrorism that the government is keeping an eye on. And they take his name, Pierre Smith, and then they run it through this sort of, clandestine Google, and they search out And they find out, oh, well, that's interesting. He purchased, I mean, this is, I'm trying to get an idea. He purchased a weapon in such and such and such and such. He took out a book from the library on how to make, how to mix your own home fertilizer. He did, I mean, is that what the kind of thing they're talking about then and trying to build a profile based on that?
Well, that's one of the major innovations you can do with data mining, is you can extrapolate all these, you know, listen, we have phone conversations, text messaging, emails, our web surfing is all recorded, individual credit card transactions, purchases, dates, times, locations, all these, even travel arrangements. You know, if I go to the Eiffel Tower and I sit in a cafe and I have a croissant, well, I'm going to have a credit card bill in most cases. So by piecing together all of these individual transactions on this particular individual and correlating that with perhaps other people who might have been in the same locations or the same times or purchased the same types of items, then you might be able to make a correlation between the two people and then pursue that more rigorously.
And this was something which Congress had not allowed for. They said, this is too far.
Yeah, they basically said that, you know, we don't want to be spying on people to this degree. We don't need, you know, the problem is once you put a piece of data in a database, it never goes away.
Right.
It's there forever. So every purchase, every transaction, every phone call, there's a record of it.
So then this popped up this week, though, is something which the government is actually already doing?
Well, yeah. Evidently, the report in the National Journal stated that the responsibilities for developing this technology was shifted to other subcontractors. So it was moved out of the original funding location, but the funding came from alternative source, still government, into the same development people.
So this means that it's going to happen or that it already is happening?
Well, it's being developed, as okay. I understand it. Data mining is not an exact science. And when you, it's only as good as the information and the form of the information and the consistency and timeliness of the information. So a lot of what this research is about is formulating mining structures that allow them to take credit histories, credit card transactions, travel arrangements, airport databases, and other criminal and other reporting information within the government structure, and put it in a form that it can be cleaned, organized, and then mined for.
You said earlier, and I jotted it down while you were talking, that they record all of our surfing is all recorded somewhere?
Yeah, at your, if you have, a high-speed internet connection or a dial-up connection, your internet
right.
service provider keeps logs. Those logs record your IP address, your computer name. It records all the various addresses that it connected you to. So there's an ongoing log of your transactions and activities. So if you don't want somebody someday to know you went somewhere, then you shouldn't go there, because as part of the computerization process, they keep track of this.
Why?
Because you may abuse your agreement with them. You may actually be a computer attacker, someone who uses their internet service provider through your computer to attack other systems. You might be doing illegal transactions. You might be trying to steal people's online bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera.
Is that the kind of information that they could sell on their own, that they collect it? Or would that be information that could be only gathered from an ISP through a subpoena?
Well, now, that depends on the privacy agreement, the contract you have between yourself and the ISP. If the ISP says, look, in conditions of public safety, law enforcement cooperation, and so forth, we're going to disclose any information, then they can do that. And most people don't read their privacy agreements.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I mean,
well,
I don't...
you know, they're about 1,200 pages, you know.
So ISPs are gathering that information, and then they keep it, and so data mining would allow then for the government to come in and say, well, let's find out what website so-and-so has gone to, and they could then access it without even the ISP knowing it?
Well, no. The systems can't just simply be accessed remotely. There has to be permissions given. In a lot of cases, this information would be forwarded by, you know, one of the system administrators. Now, in the case that you actually know of a suspect, that you have other evidence that says, you know, John Doe there is a bad computer person, they have a system called Carnivore, which they can plug into the ISP and record everything.
Right.
And I mean everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting, and I hope that more people consider that then when they're going to go surfing tonight. Not that they've done anything wrong, not that they're doing anything illegal or maybe even immoral, but just, as you said, that's quite a warning. Don't go to any place that you don't want anybody to know you've been to. So then back to the data mining. So we know because of this National Journal story that that they're developing this. What if Congress has already said no to this, then how can we stop it?
Well, there's a lot of different approaches. One is to cut the purse string. But if there's a financial gain, then private industry will step up and do the research. Okay. So, and there is a lot to be gained. Marketing firms collect everything we do. You know, even when you surf the web, all these cookies that are accumulating, note where you've been, what you've done, the last time you were there, and they report this information back to whatever site you visit so that they have marketing data about you. Well, this is very similar, except now it's the government that's going to have all this information. So the first issue is, you know, do we want to try and outlaw this type of thing? I don't know if that's a practical approach. The second thing is, you know, obviously you can tell Congress to never fund this anymore. But there's all kinds of other programs in the government that we may never hear about. I mean, again, you've got this very large institution that has its own momentum and its own self-determination. That's not easy to manage, and our lawmakers are, you know, they're campaigning, they're on television, they're posturing, they're doing a whole lot of things. They're not always managing the government. I mean, that's the people's job, unfortunately. They feel that it's our responsibility.
So we need to, if there's more on this that comes out, and I think this might be worth a conversation again coming up either with you or on other shows on this, because I don't think people quite realize just the depth of what that data mining could do. I mean, and you hate to think that this could ever be used for blackmail, but, I mean, if the government wanted you to testify, or if somebody somewhere really thought that you shouldn't be doing something, and they wanted, they get all sorts of leverage from data mining, and you would have a very difficult time disproving it, I would think.
Well, let's put it in another context. If I encounter someone that is suspected of having terrorist ties, and I encounter them in daily business, okay, or even in a social function, and they, you know, communicate with me a few times. They call me. I send them some emails. I put them on a distribution list and send them security stuff, whatever. Now I have an association with a suspected terrorist. And every activity I do is now fair game for exploration, which means everybody else that I have anything to do with may also become fair game for exploration.
It just becomes a kind of human virus, and you, it just, they're just, to use a metaphor, there's just some bells you cannot unring, and
yes,
that would be one of them. Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention. I wouldn't have known had you not emailed this week, and we passed that along. Glad we could get it on the air to get it on other people's radars too. And let's just not end this conversation. Let's just adjourn, you know, for now on this, and keep an eye on it for us, would you? And email back when you find out more in the weeks ahead on that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'd love to continue the conversation someday. Dr. Andrew Kolarik, have a wonderful evening.
You too. My pleasure for being here.
All across North America, it's Saturday night. We are live. Greg Braden, Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer. What is this all about? After all those years, there's a lost mode of one? One we didn't know about? Only from a guy with a mind like Greg Braden, next on Coast to Coast Live.